Maryland's original vitamin outlet, and they are proud to offer the Gary Null supplement line. Nutrition Warehouse has 6 convenient locations on Long Island to serve you. For more information, call 1-800-735-8021. That's 1-800-735-8021.
So much more than a vitamin store. Nutrition Warehouse. So much more.
Pathologizing African Americans.
Conscious living.
Deconstructing the myth of AIDS.
The Untold Story with Gary Null.
The Gulf War Syndrome.
Corporate media and the threat to democracy.
The Untold Story with Gary Null. The overdrugging of our children.
Women's health.
Choosing joy.
Investigative reports.
You won't see or hear on the nightly news.
Untold Story.
And now your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, at least for the beginning of the program, I'm going to be completing a special in-depth investigation into much of the conflict and confusion that has surrounded the radio stations within the Pacifica network. In New York, it's WBAI. Let me give those of you a brief overview if you have not heard the first two programs. First, understand that I have known no one, befriended no one, in my entire career within the Pacifica network. In fact, all of my letters, 120 letters I had sent to the foundation members, giving suggestions, offering some insights, were never returned, never answered. I was never invited to meetings at the station to discuss issues. I have been pretty much a pariah there. One person kind of said it best today in an email that someone sent me. They said, well, we may disagree with Bernard White not allowing Gary an opportunity to finish his statements on the air, and in effect taking control of the airways away from his time. But let's face it, we need Gary and his audience's money. We don't like him. We don't like his audience. And he made a vulgar statement about you, the audience. And, you know, just a bunch of baby boomer yuppies from hell kind of thing. But they've got money, and we need it. Unfortunately, they don't know who my audience is. They haven't come to sit in lectures. They haven't sat across from you. If they did, they would see you're not yuppies. You're not selfish people. You're thoughtful. You're considerate. And you're of all walks of life. From Orthodox Jews to agnostics, from the scholarly to the uneducated, from every single spectrum, because you're interested in your health, and everyone has a right to their health and happiness. So I come to this challenge, how do I do an investigation, and where I'm able to present information that I find using the same techniques that I've used on over 200 other investigations, which have not been challenged, which have been tried to challenge them. When you write an article, the very first article ever written in American history and major media against the AMA and the American Cancer Society, you bet you're going to be scrutinized by their ad agencies. They're going to do everything they can to try to find fault with what you've said. In the end, those things held. And because of it, many people's consciousness changed. Just from those articles alone, we had 60 Minutes doing a special. Geraldo Rivera did an award-winning special on my work on ABC's 2020 on Dr. Brzezinski. And Gabe Pressman did a 10-part Emmy award-winning series, again, based upon those original works. Now today, I'm not suddenly going to change my standards or take a side. I'm going to look at the facts, and wherever the facts allow me to make a determination, that's what I'll do. But there's been no predetermined bias. There's been no self-serving interest. This is a thankless position because out of my own pocket came the money for the research, the time. Someone has been suggesting over the internet that a Paul Dorenzo, who was recently hired as a producer for my radio show, had ghostwritten this, not true. I am the author of this report. This is my initiation, my investigation. I have hired a very scholarly, independent PhD from Cornell, who I very much respect, who didn't know or care about Pacific or BAI, and who therefore could look at my facts to determine if they were accurate and objective. If they were not, they were to be excluded. I'm merely sharing with you the summary report of a larger 600-page report that goes far more into depth on all these issues. It's kind of interesting, when they don't have substance to challenge you with, they challenge you with pettiness. Someone said, oh, he mispronounced a word or something, or didn't sound like it was in context. I came back to New York 2 weeks ago. I got there at 3 o'clock in the morning. I left at 11 o'clock. I was there just for a few hours to a championship race for my team and for Stella Cashman, a wonderful human being. I left my reading glasses, and then I get a fax of my report after it had been gone through by the fact checkers. And I have two separate fact checkers, facting check and verification. By the way, every single person quoted in my article was sent a copy of their information and asked them, is this what you said to Gary? If it's accurate, yes. If it's not accurate, what do you believe it should have been? That's the degree that we did this. And so it's entirely possible, when I'm trying to strain to read something, that I could mispronounce a word. Don't focus on that. Focus upon what the merit and meaning and substance of the issue is. Now, if anyone has any statements that contradict these, let them bring forward the evidence in its entirety. Opinion is not evidence. An internet memo is not evidence. I have to use the original source. The way I went about this was I brought in some trial lawyers, and I asked them, review this information. If this does not meet the criteria that you would use in a criminal trial, then tell me. That's how much research went into the facts. But the trouble is, we're dealing with two competing factions, what we will call the progressives and what we would call the dissidents. They had different ideas about how stations should be run, how a foundation should be run, what its mission should be, who its audiences were. And when you had it finally get to where one group had all it could take and it used what it could as an opportunity to attack the other group, it was a take-no-prisoners attack. Now, when I reviewed all the evidence, it came down to four primary positions. One, we were being told ad nauseum that there was an effort by corporate elites who represented a corporate model to take over the foundation, from which they could then realign the stations with station managers, program directors, and programming that met that kind of national public radio agenda. They have been highly critical of National Public Radio. In fact, they've been highly critical of everyone and everything outside of themselves. It was as if there was no club good enough to be a part of their club. If you weren't in it, then you were the other. Two, that these individuals who were right-wing demagogues, who were serving like a Rupert Murdoch type of interest, were there to sell off the stations, take the money, and three, to profit by commission, and four, to change the bylaws to allow them to hold this power against the needs of the audience. Around that, everything else was secondary of importance, and to do this, they created a coup. To create a coup, there were massive firings, purges, and a lockdown of the station, and depriving people of their democratic rights to voice their opinions, and they were excluded from dialoguing. Well, those are serious charges, and indeed, if they were true, then they deserve to be met with as much legal, conscionable protest as one could muster. But unfortunately, when I began to look and dig for the facts, it became rather clear that what they were calling proof is not what I would call proof. And so I spent months upon months analyzing, interviewing, and analyzing. And I analyzed it, and I could find no proof that there was any effort by the board to sell any stations. Now, that directly contradicts the whole basis upon which this major challenge occurred. If anyone in this audience can provide hard evidence, not not sophomoric opinion, lashing out in extreme anger, just reasonable, dispassionate facts. That's all I want to see. To show that there was an effort by the board to sell the stations, please present it. I reviewed all the minutes, all the board meetings. I can find no such evidence. Now, if evidence exists, bring it forward. I can find it not. And after interviewing dissident and progressives on the board, they could not provide it either. Instead, I showed that it goes clear back to what was called a station swap of a signal. And this had been discussed over the years by many people, but never accepted and fully rejected. One person new to the board as a volunteer. How did he get there? His local lab, local advisory board, because of his years of dedicated service to the local lab in Houston, nominated him to go to be on the national board. And in his position there as a volunteer, he saw that their wish list, all the things they wanted to do, they didn't have the money to do. So he suggested in a memo that maybe they could swap a signal, meaning take a BAI and get $100 million for it, go down the aisle, a dial, and get a smaller station and build up and try to the FCC to get them a stronger signal, and then take the rest of that money, like $90 million, and buy other stations and upgrade all these stations and give everyone their wish list. And not a bad idea, but it was never taken up. It was never adopted. It was never accepted. And it sat there until someone tapped into his computer. A lot of things happen once people started circulating half-truths. Half-truths. But it served their needs. And the people who are now yelling the loudest, screaming with the worst anger, ask them, please, calm down. Bring forth your evidence. If you don't have it, then what are you yelling about? Well, some people rose to messianic proportions. Some people had now been elevated to heroes, heroes of the takeover, the take back. But what methods were used? Many would consider them terroristic. What do you think of techniques? Death threats, barraging your employer with threats that they'll be boycotted, their home will be boycotted, their church they'll boycott if they don't fire you, if you don't resign. And then tapping into your computer, erasing it, putting viruses on it, breaking out the windows of your car, trashing your car, scraping off the paint, ripping up your tires. These sound like the acts of a pacifist organization seeking moderation, seeking reconciliation, seeking understanding. Are these reasonable acts? And when these were known, what effort was made by the leaders to stop it? This is how power was taken. The takeover of the board with all of the primary targeted dissidents, people who were first demonized. Remember, you can't hurt someone before you demonize them. First they were demonized, then they were attacked, then they were threatened, and then when they tried to hold on because they truly felt that the foundation deserved better, they were forced to leave, each one of them beaten badly. Now here's a question. They were called capitalist pawns. Well, that means their income tax, their bank accounts, would show they must have a load of money. No. Middle class people, mostly African American, and who had spent their life in community service. I asked them that question too. I read here one of the ways you were being attacked by one of the leaders was that you had never deserved to be respected as working the way most people in the liberal movement work, you know, in special causes. Oh, did they bring out the scrapbooks and the proof that they had been a part of the civil rights movement, the women's movement, the all the movements, the progressive movements, they've been there. But of course, how can you attack someone and make them look bad if at the same time you say, let's tell this person they must leave, they're a terrible person. Yes, they supported Martin Luther King and they worked and they marched. Let's get rid of this person, let's harass their boss. Yes, they also help with the child welfare and child social services program on their own as volunteers. Let's destroy this person's reputation. They're terrible. Let's find ways of getting their license revoked, like Valerie Chambers and the accountant down in Texas. Let's write letters to every one of her colleagues. But she spends a lot of time every week as a big sister and helping people from orphaned children. Well, then you're going to say, well, hold on. You want to hurt this person? Why? They have a different view of how a foundation be run. Why not accept that we can have different views? Do we always have to vilify and destroy everybody we disagree with? Aren't there other ways of sharing different points of view? Not once it got into the hands of those who had an agenda. At the end of the day, those who were allowed to scream and encourage the loudest, to hate the most, to unleash their tempers, attitudes, and distemper, won. For weeks, they chorkled on the radio about how they had beaten these people and trounced them. It was merciless, the bragging, the chest beating, people being held upon their followers' shoulders as if we have a new queen, we have a new king. And yet the rest of us were quiet. And we watched. And we watched with a sorrow. And those gadflies who have no life, who have been so disruptive and destructive in their own lives, tried to insert themselves as if somehow by leading a cause they could find redemption. And they all needed to be right. Interesting thing, when all these people finally had total power, then there was supposed to have been a healing. They had control of the airwaves. Instead, they started fighting amongst themselves. And so it is. But the original challenges and charges, they were wrong. There was no coup. One woman, Valerie Van Isler, manager of BAI, was asked to step down by her boss. They did not agree upon how a station should be managed. Now, whether Valerie was right or whether her boss was right is not for me to decide. But Valerie engaged the efforts of those in the station who believed her or needed her. But in either case, I have to ask this question. What would happen if new managers with professional backgrounds in communication came onto a station and had no loyalties and wanted to run a station that really served the interests of all people? How long would they tolerate most of what they hear on the air? If it had been by any other standards of within the mainstream media, very short order, most people would be off the air. But that hasn't been the way it's worked at these stations. Little tiny groups protecting themselves and lashing out. And that's where we stood. Let me continue then with my report. That's just a little background. If anyone has information that will challenge with facts, only facts, please share them. And if you send them to GaryAndAll.com, I will be happy, after examining them, to correct any of my statements. I offer you that opportunity. Lewis Hill founded Pacifica. Lewis Hill was a big believer in cultural programming. That's why on the first station, KPFA, he featured it. He had a wonderful mix of news and jazz, serious jazz, and ethnic and folk music, contemporary music, and lots of commentaries on public issues, a lot of intellectual work, literature, drama, both contemporary and classical were offered. Poets, new poets, were given showcases. Reviews and lectures were aired too. Philosophy, science, children's programming were all part of the mix. Where do you hear that today? You do not hear that today. You did then. I took the time to go to San Francisco. I wanted to know everything about Lou Hill. I wanted to hear his broadcasts. I wanted to read what he had written. Lewis Hill's basic idea of radio station was that it was an edifying force. Many people don't know this today, but Hill did not see the ideal radio stations as a mean for public access, or as a reflector of community preferences or opinions. Everything that the stations are trying to be today, he was opposed to. There was no local advisory boards in Little Hill's time. That wouldn't come until 1979 at the insistence of the Corporation Public Broadcasting. There was a common misconception about Hill and other Pacifica founders. They believed, today people believe that Hill was communist or extremely liberal. Not true. Hill and the original founders had an extreme aversion to communism or radical politics. They did not like anything that was propagandizing. They did not abide by or support Marxist concepts of class revolution, nor Marxist stress on economic determinism, which eliminates free will. Rather, Hill had a more of an affinity for the ideas of Jefferson and others who believed in a more open and progressive notion. He wanted to hear from all sides of the debate. Question, when was the last time you heard a conservative on BAI or any of the other stations? As if, no, this is our playpen, and it's only for radical liberalism, and you better meet our definition of that. No. Hill recognized this as a possible failure, so he shielded phrases to Pacifica's mission statement to the effect that no substantial part of the Pacifica Corporation is designed to carry on propaganda or otherwise attempt to influence legislation. Let me give you just one example of what kind of person Hill was. This is according to Rick Chirarto. He says, quote, a few months back, KPFA was responsible for a broadcast, this goes back to the 1950s, when a program participant was made the object of ridicule and insult by one of the staff members. The participant was a Republican and a daughter of the American Revolution, and therefore a so-called safe target, at least from the point of view of KPFA's many liberal listeners. But throughout the broadcast, Lewis Hill paced the corridors with a troubled expression. After the broadcast was over, Lou himself went on the air during his show, and on behalf of the entire staff, he apologized to this woman for the personal indignity she had suffered. Later, the staff was outraged, and they said, Lou, you have no right to apologize on our behalf without prior consultation in a truly democratic fashion. I was one of those who thought Lou's actions presumptuous. But Lou then raised a question, the substance of which was this. If, as a chief officer of this organization, I cannot assume a common concern for the essential dignity of the individual, what can I assume? Think about that the next time you hear myself or others being trashed and slashed and bashed, as you will. Where is that assumption of protecting the essential dignity of individuals? Another bit of history that may surprise people is that in the early 1950s, when Pacifica needed help, it was a pillar of the corporate establishment that rescued it. In 1952, the Ford Foundation gave Pacifica a generous grant of $150,000 for their fund for adult education, and this pulled them through the next 3 years. There would not have been a Pacifica Radio today, no BAI today, had it not been for the non-intrusive corporate assistance. He'll acknowledge this in his voluntary listener sponsorship book. He says, quote, encouragement from the fund has enabled Pacifica to create a new medium for a continuing education in a mature urban society, unquote. In fact, according to Matthew Lazar, quote, for the first 5 years, benefactor supported, non-commercial supported radio more accurately characterized the Pacifica project, unquote. Further, Hill's wife, Joy Hill, reported that he took pride in Pacifica's being a beneficiary of the Ford Foundation fund because it allowed the foundation to go forward. Quote, other than the beginning of the KPFA in Pacifica in 1949, what would you think would be the most satisfying thing to Lou Hill was her single answer the following. I think when the Ford Foundation gave us that huge three-year grant, it meant that there would be professionalism, acceptability, and a continuation of the legacy. Let's take a look at some of the staff perceptions. Considering all of these facts about Lewis Hill, are people fighting each other? One time WBAI manager and board member for over 12 years, Frank Millsbaugh, says, quote, Lou was a pacifist, so he would not have appreciated protesters doing things like shooting through office windows, threatening people, and jeopardizing their livelihoods. He was also an intellectual, so they would not have appreciated him. If Lou Hill showed up on the scene today, he would not be able to get through the door of most Pacifica stations simply based upon his intellectual credentials, unquote. Former board member Andrea Sisco, a 6-year-old single-parent African-American, middle-class background, lived in the same middle-class community for over 25 years, who was harassed mercilessly, slandered, libeled, threatened, puts it this way. She says, Pacifica and Lou Hill were to provide a voice to the voiceless. That doesn't necessarily mean the poor. In her view, the majority of Americans, the silent majority, are in fact voiceless. But they're not necessarily poverty-stricken. Sisco believes that Pacifica has become out of touch with its audience and with the mission set by Hill. She explains, quote, most of the people at the station don't even know who their listeners are. Do you know the average salary of listeners across the stations is $60,000 to $65,000? She feels that programs covering such issues as landlord-tenant disputes on the Lower East Side are fine, but that programs more key to middle-class and upper-middle-class people have been given short shrift, as if airing them would be violating the Foundation's mission. This, Sisco and others feel, is a skewed understanding of Pacifica's purpose, which is not to be leftist or anarchistic or Marxist, or to cater only to, quote, ghetto mindset, unquote, but to provide a forum for all perspectives and all people. Former board member John Murdoch also speaks about a vision of what Pacifica should really be. Quote, it's not a political radio. It's community radio. There should be political speech, but also artistic speech and other forms of speech by people in the community. It's not meant just to be a tool of one political viewpoint where your involvement was subject to a litmus test by whether or not you're sufficiently liberal, progressive, or activist, but that's what they've turned it into, unquote. Let us examine the continuing turmoil. I see a difference in ideology between the two groups involved in what I call the Pacifica fiasco. The group of deposed board members was trying to be more progressive, to bring more topics to the airwaves, to cultivate a wider audience, and to manage the stations in a professional manner as possible. While the dissident group, adherents of an ultra-leftist ideology, wanted to go back to the comfort of one-sided politics, they did not seem to value the concept of management accountability, but rather believed that you could say anything and do anything with impunity. And if you had no audience, it didn't matter. You could still be on the air. I believe it's unfortunate for the Foundation that this latter group has prevailed. The dissidents were able to take control of the Pacifica board pursuant to a court-ordered settlement agreement dated December 12, 2001 in the case of People versus Pacifica Foundation in Alameda County. Interestingly, it was after the dissidents took over the mass control of the station that massive firings really started. Every single station manager was fired without notice. The national public news staff were all fired with no notice. There were, in fact, 24 firings with no notice, which was something that was unacceptable. Since the dissidents gained control of the Pacifica board, there were 33 more employees, producers, and talk show hosts were summarily terminated or forced to leave under duress at different stations. And this is only what is the beginning. There are purge lists that I have seen where more is to come. These terminations were staggering in their sheer number and appear to violate provisions of the settlement agreement that were specifically negotiated and ordered by the court in order to prohibit such massive firings. Furthermore, I've had substantial feedback, plus it's my own subjective impression that the sound of the stations across the country, with some exceptions, are simply becoming too difficult to listen to. Frequently, the conversations are guttural, chaotic, and personal pettiness and vindictiveness. I have listened to tapes of one individual program as an example on one of the five stations that in the last 4 months, all he can do is attack people. there seems to be little management accountability for any broadcast. An ad hoc group calling themselves Friends of the Fired Band and Future Plaintiffs got together to express their concerns about what has happened in the new dissident-run environment. These band and fire producers and other staffers believe that many of the actions taken by the current board and station management have not only been arbitrary, capricious, and illegal, but also undermine Lou Hill's mission. Prime among the questions and actions are, of course, the firings and the show cancellations. The group points out that the court settlement prohibited such summary firings with no opportunity for response. Nevertheless, such firings have occurred. A few random examples: Edgar Boulder, whose WPFW jazz show was canceled without notice; WBI co-host J.C. Calderon, whose Latino Journal met with the same end; Ken Gale, WBI, who was fired and banned with no prior notice; Lou Hankins, WPFW general manager, was fired; Mark Shub of KPFK, the general manager, forced to resign; and Andy York, WPFW engineer, forced to resign. What the Friends of the Fired want is immediate reinstatement of these individuals. They also request an independent investigation into whether or not current station program officials have offered any jobs as favors to those who fought as dissidents against former board members. I have had someone recently contact me who is, I will say, an insider in the dissident camp, who has given me enormous amount of information, and I have been able to independently corroborate some of this, that the local labs and at least one of the stations are virtually running the station. And they have their own political agenda, and they want to change everything on the station. If they do that, the station will dissolve. They'll be unlistenable. The station management and its staff are afraid. And what they don't realize is that once these people get their agenda in motion, they generally win. Because who wants to fight them?
This is 1600 WWRL, New York.
1600 WWRL. It is now 28 minutes now from 2 o'clock. We're reminding you, of course, that we will continue our program in a very short while. Additionally, you can listen out for Prince Kalunda coming up this afternoon from 3 until 7 o'clock. 1600 WWRL. WWRL, New York's R&B and Caribbean station. We now return to our program.
1600 WWRL.
For those of you who wish to hear the remainder of my report, I will be streaming it over our internet services, and I will make a copy of our report available. I've been informed that we cannot continue with this report today, and that's fine. We will get the message out. The full executive summary, which is 53 pages, I will be putting available to people in the very near future. I was nearing the completion of this discussion, and it will be available. You'll be able to read it. Now, let's go over to what we normally talk about on this program, and that's the issues that are impacting upon our lives. I'm going to open up our phone lines now, and questions that you have about your health, nutrition, or any other issues that you find are important, share your thoughts. Our number here on WWRL, 718-335-9975, 718-335-9975. I'm Gary Nall, and we'll take your calls, 1-833-59975. I'm Gary Nall, and we'll take your calls. This is part of the untold story, and this story certainly has been told, but enough of it has been told that I believe people have an idea of my concerns and my concerns for the future of non-commercial radio. The most constructive part of my dialogue, unfortunately, is you will read about, you won't be able to hear about. Let's go to the phone, see who's on the air. Please give me your name and what your issues are, please. Go ahead, you're on the air. Hi, Dave.
Hello?
Dave?
Yeah. Hi, Gary.
Hi, Dave.
Am I here?
Where do you want to be, and then I'll tell you whether or not you're here.
Okay, there you go. I'm sorry. I'm just calling to find out. I went to my doctor, and...